time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, Divine Miss C.
And welcome to the show. I'm so glad you've tuned in today. My guest is my good friend, Brenda Ayala. Now, Brenda recently completed her law degree, and she's also a general contractor. She served on a mission to Africa, and Brenda will eventually become involved in human trafficking law, which is a topic that I read about frequently. We're going to be discussing the history of human trafficking, how it operates, and what you can do to help. I want to welcome you to the show, Brenda.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Well, share some information about yourself.
Okay, well, like you said, I just graduated from law school less than 30 days ago, so this is kind of a new feeling of joy for me. I've actually just now stopped reading everything in sight because I really don't have to for a minute, and I'm enjoying that. I'm also a licensed general contractor. I've been working in the state of Florida for the past 11 years and enjoy that work. I will always continue to hold a license, and because I'm physical, I like having my hands in projects, which actually is why I went originally to Africa, was to help build some well-needed housing for some of the orphans that live in Bali. And so it just, you know, all of those things made for a perfect bowl of soup. And that's really where I first became aware of any kind of trafficking, was really while I was in Africa. So it was kind of fortunate for me that during my next to the last semester in law school, I took a class with then professor, now dean, Stevie Swanson, who is a published writer, an incredible resource of information on both slavery and human trafficking, did her undergraduate in that area of study. So I learned from what I believe is the very best. But what she did was she made me see something that I hadn't seen before, and now I can't unsee it. So now that I know that it exists, I can't ignore it. So I want to use my voice and my ability to reach lots of people to just raise awareness, bring in resources for this area that, you know, it's like any other area that is shameful. You don't want to talk about it. So that's really what I want to accomplish, you know, over the next little while.
And I think that's a good goal, because you talked about actually doing that as an attorney. You know, you hear about human trafficking. When I read about it, you mostly hear about it in other countries, but it's also prevalent in the United States. How would you define human trafficking?
Well, I think what we see the most in public and in the media is the sexual side of human trafficking. So lots of runaways, people that come from other countries that might be illegal, just looking for a way to survive. Before they know it, they've been reeled into an area that they can't get out of. And you mentioned, you know, we normally hear about this in places around the world, but in fact, every state in the union has been affected by human trafficking. Here's a statistic that I think is pretty sad. In Florida, we are number three. We are ranked number three in the entire country for incidents of human trafficking. And that is a sad, sad number when you think about it, because this is a list you certainly don't want to be at the top of. So for me, that's a public cry. It's pandemic for me because it's worldwide. And it's an area of law that I feel like I can use my skills to bring awareness to through legislative action. I want to be a voice for people that can't really help themselves. That's really super important to me.
Now, you know, it's in other countries. Would you consider this a global epidemic? Is this slavery everywhere?
It certainly is. It certainly is. You know, wherever you go, there's a predator or a parasite looking to take advantage of someone that's a weaker vessel, a weaker person in need. That happens everywhere. It's a human condition. So if there are, you know, people that don't tend to do things on the up and up, they're going to find another way to satisfy their goal, meet their own needs. And usually it comes on the backs of other people. That's the worst part. It comes on the back of people that are already oppressed, people that need companionship, people that are lonely, isolated. All of those things are benchmarks for a trafficker. He will look for those things in people.
Now, do you have any idea, Florida, United States, the world, how many victims are there?
There are hundreds of thousands of victims internationally. It's a huge number, and you'll find some of those statistics on for instance, Sail of Freedom will have all of that information for you as well. But there are plenty of places that have human trafficking, and it's going on right around you. So hundreds of thousands of victims are international. There are, you know, upwards in the hundreds of thousands, 100,000 in the state. So it's happening everywhere. Florida, unfortunately, is number three, and that's a number that we have to get down dramatically because this affects everyone, not only children.
Now, you know, you talked a little bit about why you're interested in human trafficking. How does the law work here? I don't know if you can answer, but how does the law work here in Florida, internationally? Is it federal or by state? To me, it's mind-boggling that there can be hundreds of thousands or, who knows, maybe millions of people that are enslaved. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Well, you know, there is a federal law that speaks to human trafficking specifically. In the state of Florida, we have a version, as does every other state, a version of that law. For us, if you look at our statute, 787 speaks about human trafficking, kidnapping, those kinds of things. 0.06 speaks specifically to human trafficking, and it is federally recognized as an issue. Each state individually is coming up with their own laws to varying degrees. But I think it has to be much more, because when you hear about some of this, it kind of makes your mouth fall down. The National Human Trafficking Resource Center, if you look that up online, you'll see some of the numbers, and you can go to each state's site and see what their specific rule is regarding human trafficking.
Now, I would think, you know, with people, you can find statistics for a lot of the questions I'm answering online, but my personal guess would be it's much higher than what you actually see, because how do they even know how many people, you know, are enslaved?
You make the point exactly. So many people don't report it. It's a shameful thing in their mind. Once you've been abused in this way, you don't feel good about yourself. What starts the process also is the part that lingers, and that's low self-esteem. Usually when someone gets into a situation like this, it's because they're alone, they're abandoned, they're unemployed, they need family, they're runaways, they're drug addicts. It could be a host and a long list of things that would provoke someone to kind of lean towards somebody that's offering something more, right? So if you don't have anything and someone comes along and says, oh, I can't believe your parents treated you that way, you know, this is a person that's a lost soul anyway, they're looking for something and someone to comfort them.
Oh, sure.
And that's exactly the tactic that is used.
Right. Well, ISIS does that. They find lonely teenage girls, you know, and then and they convince them to come to the other country. I want to get more into where victims get trafficked from, but I want to ask you, what is the history of human trafficking? I mean, any idea when it started? Has it been around for hundreds of years?
Well, I mean, hasn't it been around for hundreds of years? Slavery itself is human trafficking.
Right.
I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, as long as slavery has existed, human trafficking has existed. What's happened is that we've traded one form of slavery for another form of slavery because it's against the law to be open about your bondage to another with another person. Wouldn't you agree?
I would, but I'm still boggled again. Like with you know, slavery in foreign countries, you know, is it allowed there? Is it not allowed there?
You know, some countries allow it. Some countries allow it. It's very open. I mean, you know, if you look at places like China and the Philippines, it's very open and discussed, and it's just what it is. Little girls in Asian countries that I know of and I've read about recently, you know, girls don't have a high economic value in China. So some of these girls are just given away, sold. They're sold to people that would traffic. They would lead them into prostitution. Some of them are shipped out to other countries, parts unknown. So now this poor victim who's lost family is now re-victimized by being put in a place where they don't know anybody, where they have no help resources. They have no connections to human life because isolation is the best tool of an abuser. And a trafficker is certainly an abuser. So you go from slavery to we get smarter about the slavery. It keeps evolving in what it covers. And now there's a whole global network of of this industry, and it's profitable to the tune of billions of dollars a year worldwide, billions, with a B. That's a lot of money that's being made off of the backs of people that are unfortunate, and that's what has to stop. America is viewed as, you know, one of the greatest examples of legalism and legislation, and we have to put things out there that help these people break free so that it becomes worldwide recognition. We want a spotlight on this issue worldwide. It must happen.
Now,
because this is slavery, too.
Yeah, and I read somewhere recently that the Super Bowl is one of the key areas where human traffickers come to do their thing.
Isn't that incredible?
It's,
isn't that just mind-blowing?
Disgusting would be my choice of word, but, you know, I'm stunned. But I want to talk about where victims get trafficked from. Talk about the traffickers and where the victims come from.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, remember I said earlier, I said parasites, predators, okay? Those
right.
two words are different, but in the mind of a trafficker, they're kind of the same. They troll the streets. They troll schools. They troll churches. There is no place that's unturned. A great example of one that we read about all the time is malls. You know, you think you're going with your friends to a mall to just hang out. You know, maybe they see somebody in a crowd of girls or boys. It's not unique and specific to women and girls. This happens to everybody. So if they see somebody in the school, a fish, that doesn't quite belong, or looks like they feel awkward, or not really welcome, or just look troubled, looking down, low self-esteem.
The weakest link.
That is a perfect target. The weakest link, yes, indeed. That is a perfect target for a trafficker. So let me carry the girl scenario out.
Okay.
Girl doesn't feel good about herself. Maybe she's young, preteen, tween, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. There is a term in human trafficking that Stevie Swanson quotes as saying Romeo'd. Somebody is Romeo'd. They are romanced into their own bondage. So a trafficker would come up and be very charming. They might tell him, well, you're the prettiest girl in the bunch. You know, you're so great looking. Let me buy you a cookie and a Coke, whatever it is, to kind of pull her away from her hurt a little bit. Now, this might be someone that doesn't feel good about themselves. So they take that opportunity to create a very unreal bond with them. They romance them, hence the term Romeo'd. Because once they've got them in isolation and once they have them believing that they have an interest in genuinely taking care about them, they make for a much better victim. Because now they're isolated, now you trust me, and now I can take advantage of you. So it's not, you know, it's, and that would be the same scenario that would you, not only for sex trafficking, but forced marriages, I mean, you know, organ trade, the list goes on, labor trafficking, it's all the same. There has to be, they're selling the sizzle, which is why they're getting victims in the first place. So they're appealing to what appears to be missing, and that's the key in to losing your freedom.
Yeah, and it's making me think, and I'm not a parent and you are, but do parents nowadays or do the schools even talk about this topic so that, you know, someone doesn't, so that a kid does not end up in this situation thinking that the person they've met is really their friend? You know, it makes me think of that old phrase, stranger danger.
It's so true. Stranger danger still exists. The strangers are just getting slicker about how they present the danger. So I would say this. I know that there is awareness. I know that there are public forums. I know there are dollars spent in education. But really, this is the responsibility of a parent. A parent, I am a parent, as you said. I have a boy and a girl. Love them to death. This is a conversation I would have immediately if I have children, to recognize signs of someone that's trying to lure you away. Because this is a predator, but he's also a parasite. He's going to make money off of the backs of these children for his own survival or her survival. I say that meaning both sexes. It could be either. So what? Yes, there are programs in place that educate, but the real responsibility is going to be on parents. And I'm talking about from the time your kids are little, 5, 6 years old, when they have cognitive thought, once they understand what a stranger is, you need to be talking to your children. Because this bond between this parent and this child about being open and honest in the discussion is the thing that's going to prevent that child from being able to be isolated. There has to be a connection. That child has to feel connected to someone to keep them from going to something else.
Okay, now what about social media? You know, can are girls approached, or even guys, are they approached on social media by traffickers?
All the time. And that's probably the easiest access, a child or a young adult, or maybe someone who doesn't know the language. Social media is everywhere. It's on our phones. We couldn't get away from it now if it was our heart's desire. It's everywhere. So that's a great place to be profiled and checked out. You ever notice that you're getting Facebook requests, friend requests from people you're already friends with, and you're like, what's going on here?
Right.
You never know who that is. It could be a hacker.
The duplicate account.
It could be a drug dealer. It could be any number of ill repute. It could be anybody. So, again, that's another conversation. We got to get smart about talking about this stuff. When you bring stuff into the public eye and into the light and into the area of public awareness, it doesn't stand a chance of survival. Once everybody knows it's happening, then the trafficker is known now. This person becomes observed. Now we start to know what to look for. It starts from the time a child is small, and you continue to remind them of things to look for as they get older, because as the child gets smarter, so does the trafficker.
Yeah.
So we constantly need to be educating people, young and old, hey, talk about it. If we hear about something new in the news, some new wriggle they've created to lure you in, get vocal and start talking about it. That is a must.
You know, I want to point something out on Facebook, too. A lot of parents don't, well, some parents are smart and they don't even allow their kids to do Facebook until they're in their teenage years. But some parents don't even monitor their kids who do have Facebook. And one of the things with Facebook is you can lock your account down to private and restrict your friends. And I've seen situations with kids I know who have open accounts, and to them, they're friends collectors. They may have thousands of friends, which they don't literally have. They don't know any of these people, and now they all have access to their Facebook account. People also post too much information, especially kids, where they live, their date of birth, you know, where they're eating out, what they're doing. And so, in a way, while they're thinking honestly, the traffickers are deceivers, really, and they're looking for that information and to see, hey, is this kid a lonely type kid who doesn't have a lot of friends and they're just collecting a lot of friends? So I think the parents really have to monitor the social media of the kids or limit it.
Well, you know, you are spot on in that, because here's the thing. As a parent, it's my responsibility to know what my kids are doing. And you got to realize, too, when people are collecting friends, what are they feeling about themselves? Does this in their mind give them value? Do people see them making just tons and tons of friend requests? Did they go from 1,000 today to 1,500 tomorrow? I mean, what is the motivation behind needing so many contacts? So that's a sign. That's a sign that this child or this person is feeling a little lonely. It could be a sign that they're looking for attention. Well, who better than a trafficker to give them attention? Oh, I'll give you everything you want. Come over here and hang out with me. You know, and it's surprising how fast it happens. And it's because children, especially, are so trusting. So let me give you an example of something I saw yesterday that made my heart stop.
Okay.
My daughter lives in West Tampa, and I went to have dinner with her last night. While we were sitting on the porch, it was 9 o'clock. A little girl, no more than 6, is just walking around the block by herself. It's pitch black. It's not the best area of town. Some of the people were saying hello to her. I guess this girl walks around the street all the time. Now, this is a little child. This is a child that may not need attention or affection from the opposite sex, but may need just to be held, might need a hot meal, some clean laundry. So somebody coming up to this child, say it was me, use me as an example. What if I'm a trafficker and I'm like, oh, hi, honey, I like your dress. You know, it doesn't have to be the opposite sex.
Right.
It can be a mother figure coming in to lure a child. You know, so where are the parents?
Yeah.
Where's this child's parents? That's a great question. But it's also true in social media. Where are you, parents? You have a duty and an obligation to know what's going on with your child and in your child's life. It starts at home and branches out everywhere else.
Yeah.
So this is a child at risk. And, you know, I'll be following up to see where that baby is tonight. I'll be going back again. It's not acceptable.
No.
And we as a community have to stop that from happening.
That's a form of child abuse in itself. Who lets a 6-year-old wander the streets?
Absolutely.
That's bizarre.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the types of slavery. You know, we have a whole list here, trafficking of children, how they're induced, they sold, a runaway. Talk about the different types of slavery.
Well, you know, I mean, there are economic slaveries. You know, if somebody's got, if somebody needs money, you know, the lure is the money. If it's affection, kind of like what we were just talking about now, you know, it's I just need to be held. I need to be helped. You know, it can be sexual trafficking, slavery, having to have sex for mere survival. It can be drugs. It can, anything that can be made into evil will be used. And that's the saddest part. You can't pinpoint it to one thing because it's multiple things. Human trafficking can involve any sort of criminal activity, even like, you know, doing work without licensing, things like that, just to be able to provide. That's why I say it's not women and little girls only. It's grown men. It's little boys. It's people that have a specific need that they can't get on their own. This is how they end up in a situation where they're not free anymore.
And what it sadly tells me is that there's a large population, a large percentage of the population that is sociopathic or psychopathic that has the need to fulfill their urges on this. And yet, where are the higher percentage of people who are doing good to say, whoa, stop? You know, this is, to me, it's that's outrageous.
It is outrageous. And that's why last night, you know, there was something so wrong with that picture in my mind that a child is walking around a busy area of Tampa. But that's, how many times did that child walk around the block before somebody actually walked up to her and held her hand and said, hey, are you lost? Do you know where your mom is? You know, which is what happened yesterday. This little kid is wandering around the city. There are thousands of kids like this that are out late that nobody's paying attention to. And this is fodder for a trafficker.
Oh my gosh.
So for us, I think how we get these little kids protected, these bigger kids protected, these men and women protected, is by getting vocal. You've got to start saying, I'm seeing this happening. This is not normal. We have to address it as a community. We must address it. We must talk about what we see. We must take things to authorities. We must police to get more involved, which they are, and I'm going to definitely go there next. And also, too, just education, education, education. So one of the things, let's talk about law enforcement. Law enforcement is so critical and so important. Like, even if you start with the child last night, them being able to say, look, this isn't normal. This child's going to be the victim. Holding parents and not children accountable is the key. But another key for law enforcement is that because now they're starting to recognize signs of human trafficking, there's going to be, in the next couple of years, a huge shift in terms of how human trafficking is viewed for the victims and for the trafficker. So say, for instance, you're a prostitute. You're a real prostitute. That is your vocation. You have someone that takes your money, your pimp, takes your money. You get your very basic needs covered, and that's what you've chosen. Well, how would you recognize that between someone who's in captivity?
Right.
How would you recognize that?
You wouldn't. And interestingly, a few days ago, I just caught the tail end of a show on cable TV about this very topic. And I caught the end where they had interviewed a couple of women. And they basically said, we're looked at by law enforcement as prostitutes. But in reality, we were enslaved.
Right.
There was no escape. It was survival for us. It was forced survival. And yet the way that they're treated by their community and law enforcement is even more despicable. It's like a double whammy.
Right, you're victimized and re-victimized and re-victimized. It's kind of like heating up soup. After so many times, it just loses its allure. You know, you just kind of get in a situation where you give up your fight, and you're kind of like, okay, I'm a prostitute, whatever. You give up on yourself even because you're constantly pounded with the message that you did something wrong.
Right.
So that you walked me right into what I was going to talk about. So there's a group called Sail of Freedom. I'd love for you to look that up, audience, sailoffreedom.org. They are doing amazing things for adults and victims of human trafficking. There's some amazing statistical information there. But what it talks about in one area is law enforcement and how the scope of what they're seeing is very different now. Here's an example. Whereas before, a police officer would arrest a prostitute, he would automatically charge her, arrest her. Where's the John? He's running away, jumping in his car, going back to his wife and his kids. Well, now the law is changing. They're starting to ask questions. They're starting to get a better understanding. Is this a prostitute or is this a victim of human trafficking? Once they have determined that this person is a victim of human trafficking, now we have resources. One of the things that's happening in our legislature, and the ripple is going all the way to Tallahassee and going to Washington and states and parts unknown, because this is the reality. For a victim of human trafficking to have a record of prostitution is an absolute abomination. This person's lost their health. They've lost their freedom. They've lost their livelihood. And you're going to further disrespect them by giving them this long litany of charges that will stay on a permanent record. The state of Florida says that if someone's been arrested for prostitution 3 times, it's now a felony. So groups like Sail of Freedom are working to educate law enforcement so that those records of those proven victims are being wiped out.
And I think that's
so where
what,
you have these people with hundreds of charges, they're being clean.
And that's what should happen.
How about that?
That's the right thing to happen. And I agree with you. And you know, how do you recognize the signs of sex slavery? I mean, if you're not a law enforcement officer, you saw mm-hmm. a child walking, that they could become one. But it makes me think of, mm-hmm. you know, again, I'm going back to Facebook. You see those postings of missing teens all the time. And so were those missing mm-hmm. teens abducted or did they run away? And now you've got these traffickers that are honing in on them. You know, it's like they have radar for it and they're disappearing, right?
That's exactly right. And think about it. All right. Now, not only runaways, but let's talk about LGBT communities. This is important right now. This is a fiber of our community. This is happening right now, real time. These are also people that have been rejected. There is no place for them. So it opens up a whole new group of people that are going to find themselves in this situation. You're going to start noticing in a victim of trafficking that the self-esteem has been crushed. That might be a runaway. It might be someone that was sold, which is just beyond my mind for right. a number of reasons. It could be someone that was just lost to society. Maybe parents couldn't afford to take care of them anymore. These are the people that you'll see as victims. It could be someone that lost their job, could be given to addiction. It's almost exactly the same thing that you would see in prostitution, right?
Right. Right. I want you to hold your thought for a second. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back in just a second. We're going to continue on.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more. Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
Consumers, do you have bad credit? Can't purchase a house or car? Paying too much in interest on your credit cards and loans? Scammed by credit repair companies? There is hope. You can get back on track and do it the right way. Call Credit Education Consultants today at 813-500-6064. That's 813-500-6064. Or go to crediteducationconsultants.com now and get the help you need. Don't delay. Call today. Mortgage reps and realtor inquiries are also welcomed.
Welcome back to the world of Lori Zook. My guest, Brenda Ayala, and we are talking about human trafficking. And Brenda, you had a story you wanted to share.
Yeah, so this was one of the ones that Professor Swanson, now Dean Swanson, shared with us. And it stuck with me because I thought this is the perfect place where a victim would not be recognized. This little girl was 6 years old. Her father started molesting her when she was very small. Within a year of that time, this little girl was actually being prostituted on the street. So what she was doing was going to school every day until 2:15, 2:30. He would allow her to do her homework and sleep until around 9 or 10 o'clock. And then this little girl, 6-7-year-old girl, was working through the night as a working girl, being sold by her father to men. who wanted someone very young. Now, this is like the most depraved heart thing you could ever imagine, the ultimate in depravity. This went on for 13 years until the girl was 19, and she finally left her home. Because she was so mentally in bondage in this situation, even when she was free, she wasn't free. It took her another 20 years before she had her father arrested, who died in prison, as he should have, for sex trafficking of his own child. That's just one of many, many, many stories. You hear about these children that have been kept in cages. You know, you hear about children being taken from schools. So this sets up a long line and a long life of prostitution, which is, but really, we're talking about a sex slave here. So what happens to these women? A lot of them have those records that we talked about. So now not only are they criminalized, but it also prevents them from being able to move on with their life when they pull away from a trafficker, if they're so lucky.
Right.
Most victims of human trafficking live about 7 to 8 years in that life. That's how hard it is on them. So they deserve a chance to have those records expunged, and they need to be allowed their freedom.
Right.
Yeah,
I want to point something out, though. You know, we talk about sex slavery and prostitution. Prostitutes choose it. Sex slaves are victimized.
Yes.
They do not choose it.
Yes, and it's so important that there be things set up to protect this person who's already been a victim. We've got to get them out, first of all. We've got to make them believe they can get out, because they've been told for so long, you can't get out. I own you. You're my property. Those kinds of things. So many victims, you know, they want to have a chance at another life. But how do you get that started? Victim services in some of the statutes in Florida allow for damages for victims of trafficking, but they're really low and almost impossible to prove. So say this girl who's 19, she goes to the court. She files a complaint, criminal charges against her father, for 13 years of child abuse, child molestation, and sex trafficking. What if this victim now wants to be compensated because of her legal wrong? The law says there should be a remedy, right, for everything,
right,
for every crime.
Right, to make you whole.
There should be a remedy, okay? How do you quantify the value of 13 years of your life as a prostitute? One would be the first question there. How much money was she making a night, and how do you prove it? Usually victims of trafficking don't have ledgers that line out what their losses are. So there's really no way to get this victim back to a legal and equitable place that they would have been, not even to mention the mental, social issues that they'll have as a result of it. And that's where the work is needed. That's where victim services have to step in. But it starts with the law. And that's why I've made this big circle to come around to say, law school has given me a voice and a platform to be able to talk about these issues for people that cannot, and that's my goal. So until we change legislation to protect
right.
the victim and not the Johns and the traffickers, nothing changes.
And if the laws...
So if you can't quantify lost wages... Hmm?
Yeah, if the laws were changed, so let's say there was some high amount of money. If you were, you know, if you were found, if you were convicted as a John, for example, in a case like this, and the fine would be a set amount, let's just say $1 million, just you know, throw it out there. Do you think that having laws that would have monetary fines and jail time mm-hmm. might stop the traffickers, or do you think not really, because it's
no,
such a lucrative
every
business?
Every time you put a law in place, somebody who has a criminal mind will find a way to work around it. I mean, you see it everywhere. You see it with lottery tickets, food stamps. You see it with everything everywhere. The swipers that are taking gas income, those kinds
right.
of things. A criminal mind is always going to constantly be reinventing itself, constantly. So, no, laws won't change it. Laws will slow it. But laws, most importantly, will bring public awareness to it. And then we start acting like a community. Parents start watching more. Friends start watching neighbors. We start being accountable to and for each other. And that's the real benefit of the legislation, because it gets the word out there. So let me give you an example of a monetary, what currently exists for monetary. Don't laugh out loud.
Okay.
Okay. So if a victim doesn't have a ledger, receipts, no check stubs, how do you know how to compensate them for their time that they've spent being trafficked? The same would be true of a relocation. How do you quantify how much it costs to get somebody in a safer environment? There's no way to do that, because the trafficker is not going to volunteer that information. They're not going to say, okay, she worked four nights a week from 8 to 1, and this is her average. Okay, great, for 9 years. All right, now we have a monetary amount. There's no way that will ever happen. And even if now, if you go to the statute, the Florida statute website, and you search for human trafficking, which is 787, prostitution damages, not restitution, and no punitive damages, just the amount they'll just give you just for proving that you're a victim is $200. That's the max, unless you can prove how much money you lost and put a dollar value on it.
Yeah, but that
yet
that,
another slap in the face.
That's an oxymoron. I mean, or a paradox. How can you prove something if you're the victim? Of course you're not going to have anything. There's no way to keep records or do anything. So you're right. That is a big slap in the face. And I think it speaks poorly of our laws, both state and federal, to not recognize that. And I sit here and I go, where is the common sense part of the law? It doesn't seem to exist.
Right, exactly. And so, as I was mentioning earlier, that there are federal Victims Protection Act. It's actually called Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Look this up. It's certainly worth the read. And this was the one that I was saying, that every state has a version of it somewhere. It does allow for some victim services. It does allow for some damages. It allows for some law enforcement training dollars. Now, here's one caveat that I find interesting that's in one of our laws. Say, for instance, the trafficker is within 2 or 3 years of the age of the victim. They will not consider that human trafficking, rather a dating relationship. I mean, these are some of the quirkyisms that exist in written down legislation. This is on the books in a state. It blows the mind. So it's obvious that there has to be much more attention given to the area of law enforcement, legislation, and public awareness. As a public service, we should be screaming these stories from the top of a hill, because it's happening. If we're in the top five in the country, it's happening here a lot.
Right.
So first, you know, we have to recognize the two areas that are really in need of the most desperate help right now. First, we need more beds in residential facilities, because these victims need medical care, dental care. A lot of the traffickers will brand these people with tattoos. So we need people, places, volunteers that will take those off of their body. It's hard to believe that is, I never thought about it before.
No.
But they also need life skills, training, other services. They can't get those on the street or in outpatient facilities. So they need to be taken into a facility where they can kind of decompress from what's happened to them. We also need facilities that are split into adult and juvenile sections, because the needs for a juvenile versus an adult are, in some ways, there's going to be an overlap, but you're still talking about a child. You know, this is a child. They need different services. So two of the areas where the help is most needed and the most immediate result will be felt in these two areas. First of all is that we need more beds in residential facilities, because victims need medical care, dental care, but there are other things. They need vocational skills training. Some of them have been branded by their abusers, so tattoo removal. Some will need makeovers, new hair, new color, new styles, anything to disguise their identity, because remember, these have been bondage types of relationships, so they have to be reinvented, you know, so that they can enter and start slowly walking back into what's left of a normal life for them. It'll never be completely normal. Another area that beds are needed is there has to be a separation between adults and juveniles. There are different needs for adult victims of trafficking as opposed to juveniles. Juveniles need more care. And then we also need facilities for LGBT folks as well. We have to deal with the person who is a male but identifies as a woman. We have to have facilities that compensate and allow for that and are geared for those kinds of processes so that they can work towards fixing this problem. And then the second area where we need the most help is a marginalized member of society, you know, gay, lesbian, runaways. We need professionals like doctors, dentists, again, stylists, clothing people. There's a need for lawyers, makeup artists. All of those things are important, because you're talking about transitioning someone from a way of life that has been shameful and getting them out there to become a recognized and respected member of their current society, and it takes time. So these are resources that we need the most help in. It's the biggest group. There's another group called the World Release. World Release collects quarters worldwide just so that victims of human trafficking can wash their clothes.
It's such a little thing that we take for granted, but washing and having a clean set of clothes to put on makes you feel so much better about yourself. You know, those are the two big areas, because they don't require much. They require us to give of our time. And that's really what we're asking for here, is be vocal, be vigilant, but be available, be willing to talk, to comfort, to hug, to provide services you possess. Laura, you teach piano. Wouldn't that be just an awesome way to give some love and support to some of these victims? These are the areas where we can all help right now.
Let me ask you a question, though, on the law. How do you go about changing the law? Let's just start with state. You know, let's just start with Florida. If you were to try to change the law, what would you have to do?
I mean, first of all, you would absolutely have to have public awareness. I mean, most laws that are changed are because it created a problem. Most laws that are created to prevent or alleviate a problem. So it's the same thing here. If you wanted to change a law, you have to have a public issue. A law is designed to resolve a public concern. So that's one.
All right, because
secondly, you'd have to...
Go ahead. I'll ask you after. Go ahead.
I was going to say, secondly, you really want to get your leaders in your community to hear your big idea, to hear how your law or your legislation could potentially change it. Now you're doing what's called building momentum. You want that thing to become a bill. Once something becomes a bill, then it has an audience in our Congress. That's the way our law's set up. Remember, I'm just a bill? It works exactly that way. A law, a bill, which is first, before a law, is ultimately created to alleviate or prevent a public concern. And that's how you get laws. This is clearly a problem that must be addressed. How we do it is by getting vocal and making enough noise and making enough people uncomfortable that it has to be heard on the Hill. And not only our Hill, but Alabama, Georgia, New York, D.C., Oregon, wherever. It has to be heard nationwide, because it's a global issue.
Now, let me ask you, I see a lot of these online petitions, for example, like change.org. Is that something you've ever thought of doing, or are there any that you know of where, you know, somebody posts a petition that says change the law, or usually they're specific, but supposedly if you reach a certain number, I'm going to throw it off the top of my head, it might be 300,000, but you get a certain number of people to sign a petition and it goes to the White House, I believe that they actually have to respond back and take a look. If you did it, just for example, in the state of Florida, maybe geared towards your senators or congresspeople, whoever be looking at it, is that something that you would consider doing?
Absolutely. And you can call those people, too. We forget one important factor. They work for us. So when people start calling, they start making that wheel squeak a little bit, they have no choice but to pay attention to their constituents, right? So why not? Why not make those phone calls? Change.org is free.
Yep.
All of those online surveys and petitions are free. Why not use them as a tool to open, at the very least, a dialogue, a conversation? Let's get more vocal about this. Lots being done now, but there is so much more work to be done. And those public forums are awesome tools. They're wonderful and amazing, and I encourage everybody to get online and start being vocal, because that's why we're here. America
right.
is a land of people that want to change. So let's change this. If anything, let's change this.
Now, let me ask you about economics. Is it more likely, you know, as far as the human trafficking, it seems to me that it's more likely that poor people, you know, are induced, people in poverty or their children. Do you have any idea, like financially, if that's true? You don't really hear about rich kids, you know, ending up as slaves. So it seems to be poverty.
It's very rare, but you're right. The economic, the faction of society that is poor, impoverished, you know, just kind of isolated from the rest of society because of their economic circumstance. Think about it. As a mom, I'll do anything to protect my children. I'll do anything to make sure there's food on the table. I'll do anything to survive. That's the position that you find yourself in these economic, you know, slavery relationship. That's exactly what they play on. So, you know, people that are disadvantaged, disabled, maybe mentally unstable. Again, I say addiction. Addiction covers a host of areas: food addiction, porn, you know, alcohol, drugs, whatever the addiction is. It's more likely that that person will be a target of someone that's a predator/parasite. You know, so that is probably the biggest issue, because you can't survive without some kind of money.
Right.
You just can't.
Now, I want to go back for a moment to social media, because I read that ISIS uses social media applications, not necessarily Facebook, but I've heard that as well, but other applications that are available to actually sell children for sex or sell people for sex. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am, and it happens. And, you know, thank God there are agencies throughout the country that are setting up things and fake websites to catch some of these predators, you know, and you're merely scratching the surface because they'll continue to come up, they'll continue to arise. But yes, they use sites, but so are we. And that's really a good ending to that story, is that yes, traffickers are using websites and social media to get victims, and our government is getting smarter and putting websites out there to attract traffickers so that we can start getting some of these people off the street. And I'm really happy to see that.
Now, let's talk about the prosecution end of it. How are cases prosecuted? And maybe you can give me an example. Like, let's go for they're prosecuting the trafficker. What happens?
Mm-hmm. If they're prosecuting the trafficker, you know, that is really the person they should be going after. So it's usually going to be something where they've been set up in a sting. There will be some other issue comes up. But a lot of times when a victim gets free, they go to the police, thank goodness, or somebody helps them get there, and they start talking about this person. This is where he is. These are the houses that he set up. Here are some of the victims' names. Yes, this one's on social media. There are lots of websites for these victims where it looks kind of like escort services, where the pictures are very beautiful and elegant, but the person looking at the site has no idea they're victims. So they're talking. It's hard to catch, you know, people that are living their lives in the shadows. And that's right. Always going to be true for a trafficker. They get licked. They start reinventing themselves. Once the heat is on, they come up with another hustle, as it were. There's always a new hustle. And so we have to be abreast and loud and vocal and watching ever diligently for the changes that happen. We as a society can report what we see, too. It doesn't have to just come from the victim. If I see a relationship between a couple of people and I think that's awkward, I'm calling on it. And even law enforcement has been trained to the extent that they'll walk up to someone that they have been watching and they know is a victim, and they'll act like they're arresting them just so that they can get them out of the environment of the trafficker. They'll take them down the street and go, do you want out? Yes, I want out. And so then they'll take them and get help. So everybody's getting a little better at their game. Law enforcement's getting better at recognizing it to prosecute to the fullest extent of the laws, but those laws need to be much more fierce, and we all agree that there's not enough there, but it's going to be. And we, as the public, have responsibility to report it as well. Let's get as many of them off the street as we can. And law enforcement has greatly improved in their efforts and in their ability to separate the two so that they go after the right person.
Now, what can someone do if they suspect human trafficking? Who can they call?
Well, they can certainly call the police. That is for certain. They can also call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. And that's also a website that has great information. It has a list of 12 things to look for in somebody that you think might be being trafficked. And then we go back to that first thing we said. Education is everything. Knowledge is power, and what you know can save somebody's life, you know.
Right.
So if you can call the 800 number, 888-373-7888. If you suspect someone is being trafficked, call 911. Call this 800 number, 373-7888, and let's get these people some help.
Okay, now we're going to wrap up in a few minutes, and I'm definitely going to have you back to do another show. Tell me quickly, what is the Polaris Project?
The Polaris Project is a non-governmental agency that administers a hotline nationwide with very little funding, I might add, but they do such a great job. This site actually ranks the state in tiers based on the criteria, the 12-step criteria that we were just talking about per state. That is an incredible resource. If you really want to kind of rip the Band-Aids off of your eyes, that's a great place to go and look for information. That's actually where I found out that Florida was ranked number 3 in the country. It's a very sad day when you're in that list, in the top 5 for sure. But it does it with very minimal funding. So these are groups, you know, where we said we need more help. This is an area that would be a great place if your help is donating. Donate and give these people some more resources so that they can get the word out. But it's a great resource, not regulated by the government, so none of the information on it is controlled or contained. It's just the honest truth.
You know, I had a visual moment here. I'm thinking, you know, I'm involved with the dog rescue for a long time. And so, you know, you see animals in cages. But you mentioned earlier about children in cages. And, you know, if somebody saw something like that on TV, I think, or on Facebook, that would kind of be a shock reality to what's truth.
Well, you could only hope so, right? I mean, we as a society have become so desensitized to human suffering. Would we? I hope we would. I hope that would be the thing that just rips our guts out so that we get more vocal and more active, you know. But society, I mean, we have kind of put blinders on about things that are uncomfortable around us, and we can't do it about this anymore. You know, too many people, too many times have lost their voice, lost their freedom, lost their health, lost their lives because we're not paying attention.
Attention to it, right, exactly. Now, we got about 3 minutes before we wrap up, so just quickly touch, because this is really a topic for a whole nother show. Psychology. What happens to victims psychologically? I mean, when they're a slave, it's almost like they're a lost soul at that point. But really, if they escape or they get out of it, can they ever integrate back into society? I don't know. I think about that question and I go, wow, that's a toughie.
It's so hard because you look at like even some of the news stories that we've seen where the little girl was kidnapped at 12 years old and she was released or got away at 18 or 19 years old. She's still Elizabeth Sweet. I remember that story distinctly. And I've seen interviews of her since that time. And it took a long time for her to kind of come around to where she would interview kind of more vocally with less boundaries. You can only imagine if someone takes your freedom, what will a person do to get their freedom back? I mean, really, we'll do anything. But once we've been in bondage that long, you don't trust that you're really free. That's the first of the psychology. You've been browbeaten so badly. You've been told you are owned by other people, that you have no life. Nobody loves you.
And you're going to look over your shoulder. You're going to look over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
Rest your life wondering if that person's coming back after you again. So, again, you know, much help, professionals needed, lawyers, doctors, psychologists would certainly go into the mix of that. It's so important to get these people talking and get them communicating with people that genuinely care and can tell them, hey, I don't know what you've been through, but I'm here. I'm willing to listen. I'll help you in any way that I can. And that could be anybody. It doesn't have to be a psychologist, psychiatrist. It can be someone sitting next to you in a group setting with their arm around you, just giving you appropriate human touch. Those little things start to change the psychology and the way a person thinks who's been a victim.
Right.
It starts there.
Well, your big things were legislation, education, and activation, and I would definitely like to have you back on another show. There's a lot to talk about. I want to thank you very much for joining me. Brenda, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
They can certainly call me at 813-405-7922. That's 813-405-7922. Or they can email me at Brenda Y Ayala, A-Y-A-L-A, at gmail.com.
Great. Thanks so much for joining me today, Brenda.
The pleasure's mine. Thanks for making this a topic of awareness. Thanks, Lori.
You're very welcome. And join me next week on The World of Lori Zook.